to spend Christmas on Christmas Island. How'd you like to spend a holiday away across the sea? How'd you like to spend Christmas on Christmas Island? How'd you like to hang your stocking on a great big coconut tree? How'd you like to stay up late like the islanders do? Wait for Santa to sail in with your presents in a canoe. If you ever spend Christmas on Christmas Island, you will never stray, for every day your Christmas dreams come true.
Can you hear me? Am I getting through to you? I have no way of knowing if you can hear me. I need to trust the technology and begin. Where do I begin? Where'd you begin when the story's so big? Touching every living thing. Everyone we know and love. How do you choose which story to tell? What to leave in, what to take out? There's so much information. Piles and piles of science and data and opinions and blame and pain. This story is not a happy one, sorry. But I need to take my chance and try to tell you what happened. What will happen. I know it can be a little confusing, this conversation across time, between my present and yours. I'll start in the past, which is where you are now. Early on in the nightmare. Back then, the more serious things seemed to be happening far away. The South Pacific Island nations started slowly disappearing. A long death by drowning. Because it was happening to brown people far away, we made the mistake of thinking that this was not happening to us. That it couldn't happen here. We were amused by the video of the president of the Maldives and the 13 government officials holding a crisis meeting underwater. We watched the image of the starving polar bear and we felt bad. But still, it's polar bears. It's far away. The droughts and famines started happening more and more, no matter how much we filled our choker boxes. In Australia, which is still far away, but not as foreign, tens of millions of animals and a landmass the size of our entire country was torched. Every January, but we still didn't get the hint. We were told that action was needed, but because it was a far-off problem, we contented ourselves with small actions, individual actions. We did our bit with our grain bins and keep cups and our electric cars, if we were able to afford them. This made us feel better, and we went about our lives. But somewhere deep down, we knew these small changes on their own were not enough. By then, we all understood that the problem was real. The science was clear. The denial became less and less. There was lots of talk, promises and protests and art, as if art could save us, but not enough action, or not the right action. We felt powerless, so we bought things on Amazon. Everything we wanted in two clicks. While the other Amazon, the one we actually needed to be able to breathe, was being snuffed out. We bought clothes, just to throw them away. We gorged on imported fruit and made up stories. Stories that were about something else. Anything else. Superheroes, celebrities, serial killers. Anything but this. The news became less and less about other things. The problems were still far away, but getting closer every day. Fires, floods, chaos, millions of people being displaced. But we're still fine, we thought. We told ourselves that here in this mild and temperate land, we'd be spared the worst of it. We began to feel the fear when we heard about a place called Fairbourne in North Wales, just across the water from us. We watched the storms breach their defences. We watched as the whole village, the houses, the shops, the roads and the playground was swallowed up and turned into a tidal salt marsh. We watched as their 850 residents became climate refugees. And the most unusual thing was that these people looked just like us. We saw fewer frosts in the winter. Summers are warmer. Great, we said. It'll make a nice change. Sure, it's always freezing here. An extra 3 degrees will be great. Bring it on, we said. And anyway, we'll be long dead by the time things get really bad. Now that Spain was largely uninhabitable, we holidayed at home. Staycations in the Costa del Cortel. Sure, isn't it the best country in the world when you get the weather? Tipping 45 degrees some days, and the tabloids showing pictures of children covered head to toe in factor 60 sunscreen, making them look like little ghosts. Lobster red OAPs with melting 99s, and headlines reading, "Drip, drip, hooray, bake to the future, Furnace Friday, and Satan called. He wants his weather back." We were used to the rain here, but now those familiar rainy days were called rainfall events. Because we abused our bogs and forests, they couldn't deal with the downpour. The rain ran down into our rivers, flooding our cities and poisoning our drinking water. The mornings were dead quiet, now that we'd lost 2/3 of our birds. The fishermen and women were all at sea, weeping over nets that only caught the plastic things we had thrown away. We never really believed that things could get so bad. More and more, places we'd actually heard of became unrecognisable. New York now looked like Venice, and Venice wasn't there anymore. Because we'd watched so many made-up stories, and because a lot of them were about the end of the world, we mixed up fantasy and reality. We convinced ourselves that the countdown timer could be stopped with seconds to spare by snipping the red wire or the blue wire. We comforted ourselves with the idea that the grown-ups, the elected leaders, the ones who were meant to protect us, would finally step in and clean up the mess. Or that science would come to the rescue, suck up all the carbon and save us from this man-made hell. I used the term man-made unapologetically, by the way. It was particularly bad for women and girls. Globally, they were more vulnerable to the worst effects. There were misogynistic overtones. Middle-aged men raged against strong female voices, dismissed them as hysterical. "That old chestnut. Chill," they said. "Chill. Work on your anger." The fear of annihilation was nothing compared to the fear of an articulate young woman. It became ugly, dangerous. But that didn't stop these women from their activism. Then there was the stay indoors notices. Advised at first, then the police on the streets, looking more like an army, made sure we stayed indoors. Not so easy for the people in this country with no front door. They had nowhere to take shelter, and so many of them died on our streets. And around the world, mass starvation. We know something about that here, don't we? They told us we had 12 years. 12 years to fix the problem. But that was a lie. The shit had already hit the fan. It was being flung around the room and it was dripping off our chins as the apocalypse was live streamed. I'm trying to explain to you what happened, what will happen in the future. But the future has no voice, no agency. Science hasn't found a way for the future to speak back to the past. There is no reverse time capsule. Maybe that's the problem. The future seems like a faraway place, easy to ignore. Look, I know you don't believe that I'm really from the future. I know you know it's just make-believe, and that's okay. I'm from NIM, same as you. And this is actually the future. Now, we are in it. Where you are standing used to be under the water, before the humans moved in. We built up the seawalls to hold back the tide. We evicted the indigenous biosphere, and we built ourselves a technosphere. Is it okay that I'm okay with that? You see, I'm from here. This entirely us-made environment is my home, my community, where my family and friends live, where I am growing up, a place I love, despite its unnatural nature. This place I call home is a black hole of consumption. Energy in, energy out. Goods and information, data and delicatessens. Back in the day, around here, the consumption made its mark. You could see it, you could smell it. Today, everything around here looks clean and shiny. But it's a veneer, a facade of chrome and glass, and it gives the illusion of cleanliness. It's an iceberg. There is a lot unseen below the surface. The burden is less tangible. It's less physically experienced, so we don't see the problem. And I think about how I'm communicating with you now, and I wonder, am I a hypocrite? I'm connecting with you through technology that is powered by lithium-ion batteries. Like the ones used in your electric car, or your hybrid car, and all of your laptops. For these things to work, we need cobalt. A pretty blue metal dug out of the ground by children in a faraway place. The dust from the mines makes the children sick. But none of us can live without our bright and shiny screens. And electric cars will save the planet. And when we look at these things, we don't see the suffering built in. So we don't make the connection. It's far away. It's like a dream. Or a meme. Can you hear me okay? Good. We'll carry on. We were warned about this. We were given notice. Years before I was born, one of the world's most famous climate scientists said that the Earth's climate was warming and that humans were the primary cause. It would have been a challenge if we started all the way back in 1988. Or after Rio, or after Kyoto, or after Paris. But we didn't. We kept burning, we kept consuming. We were more frightened of system change than climate change. The longer we waited, the higher the mountain became, the harder it became to climb. And now we're rearranging the deck chairs, doing our bit by filling up our grain bin, if you have a grain bin. Did you know a lot of families around here weren't provided with one of those? Living here close to the water, it's a risk. It always has been. Flooding's nothing new here. Just ask the insurance companies. But now it's looking like this place will be one of the first to go. And if it's true that the poor pay more, then it's the poorest who pay the most. They pay with their homes, their hopes, their lives. In faraway places, on islands with funny names. Like Christmas Island. Sounds like the happiest place on earth. And far enough away when they needed somewhere to test their bombs and observe the destruction from a safe distance. Today, we are watching again, from a safe distance, as the island drowns. This is not about our children or our grandchildren anymore. It's not about future generations. It is about us. In 5 years from now, or 10 years from now, when we remember this moment. This moment when there was still a chance. A 50-50 chance only, but a chance nonetheless. How will our future selves judge us? Will they be proud of us? Or will they curse us? We know the story, but it's not enough to know it. We have to feel it. Can you feel it? Is your heart breaking? Do you cry? Do you grieve? I do. We need change. But real change is frightening. Like an earthquake. You'd lose a lot, no matter what your postcode or what your bank statement says. Little changes are important, but big changes are what's needed. The people in charge are under a spell. They're even more enchanted with this broken system than we are. We need to show them the way. Will we rise up? We've risen up before. We're known for it around here. We named streets after rebels, like the street I live on. Used to be called Great Brunswick Street. When it was time to rise up, it was this community and communities like it. It's time to rise up again. Not for a flag, not for a nation, but for our planet home. You and me makes us, and we, all of us. A group made up of groups, made up of people of all ages from different places and backgrounds, sharing a common love of this earth. Us, we, together, activate it like our lives depended on it, because they do. In the name of our future selves, future hopes, future dreams, future family, future love, future heartbreak, future beauty, future songs, future parties, future river swims, future careers, future laughter, future wisdom. You, me, us, all of us. What choice do we have?